Welcome to the 21st, I should say. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Wednesday morning, the Illinois General Assembly says it'll reconvene for session next week. It will be the first meeting of the legislature in more than 2 months and comes as Illinois now has more than 83,000 confirmed cases of COVID-19. Among those, 3,601 of our fellow Illinoisans have been killed by the disease. The Illinois House of Representatives will reportedly be meeting in a large convention center in downtown Springfield, the better for its 118 members, staffers, lobbyists, and the press to do business from a responsible social distance. The Senate, with half that number of lawmakers, will be meeting in their usual location in the Capitol building, but of course, nothing in this pandemic is happening as usual. Joining us to talk about this and more is Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford. She's the number two Democrat in the Illinois Senate from Maywood and representing parts of Chicago and its western suburbs. She's also chair of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus. Leader Lightford, thanks for joining us this, I'm sure, busy morning on the 21st.
Oh, thank you, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
So I understand Senate Democrats have been meeting in caucus this morning. What is the latest? What can you tell us about the General Assembly's plans for next week?
Well, thus far, what you spoke of is totally accurate. We will be on site next week, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, in order to keep the state moving forward. We'd like to make sure we focus on some sort of COVID relief package. We're hoping to have a capital reappropriation bill. We have constitutional amendments to address, and of course, our budget. And so there's items that we just have to move. You know, the feeling of being an essential worker is definitely something that I've thought about others and prayed for them, and now it's my turn to make sure that we continue with our business before May 31st.
Sure. And obviously there's a lot that I'm sure will be on the agenda. And I want to come back to that idea of essential workers, because I know that's been something that you have focused on in your Senate career for a long time now, people in terms of the minimum wage and other things. But sticking with the legislative session for now, what is session going to look like? I mean, session is usually a time of handshaking and quiet, close conversations as people are, you know, working out their differences on issues. I don't think anyone is quite prepared for, you know, how different this could be. Can you talk a little bit about what sort of rules might be in place?
Yeah, we're still trying to finalize how it would actually look. We know that we will not have staff that we generally would have. We're trying to do as much virtual prior to arriving on that Wednesday. So all of the legislative matters that we're addressing, we've had these subgroups convene twice a week for the last 5 or 6 weeks. So all of our legislative issues, we've been, you know, still in the grind, moving things forward, and each work group will have a package. So we, during that time, decided which legislative initiatives were COVID-19 related that we needed to address right away, which initiatives that perhaps could just as important but could hold off into veto session, and then those items that we thought could just wait until next spring to file over again. So we did a lot of breaking things down already, so we know what those legislative initiatives are in every single category. But
sure,
some of the bigger, most difficult ticket items is just addressing the budget shortfall, trying to find a place where we can make sure our pension obligations are met, making sure we reappropriate capital so that we can keep the economy moving in terms of roads and bridges and projects and things of that nature going. The constitutional amendments that were going to be on the ballot for the November election, still making sure those things are in play. So as 59 of us find our way into our offices, we'll be limited to movement. We'll have food sent into our offices, of course, and then we'll do on the Senate floor. We're still, now that's our sticking point, that we've not fully realized how we're going to vote. If we're going to vote in groups where there'll be 20 at a time spread out across the complete floor, and there'll be three separate voting, or one person will go and vote on behalf of four or five people. We just don't know yet how that'll look. We're trying to make sure we stay within confines of the Constitution as much as possible, but we're trying to also keep members safe and making sure that we get our job done diligently but safe as well.
Sure. Now we've heard a lot of pushback, particularly from parts of Illinois that have not seen at least as many confirmed cases. There are probably still cases in these places, but maybe the official numbers are a little bit lower. Pushback on some of the governor's closure orders and an eagerness to have people begin circulating and going to businesses sooner. Do you have a sense of what the legislature, whether the legislature is going to weigh in? So far, it's just been Governor Pritzker who has been sort of making these rules for the state of Illinois during this pandemic. Do you think the legislature needs to step up and codify some of these things that have been done through executive orders so far?
Well, I do not. I believe that the governor and his team has done a very good job, including Mayor Lightfoot. We do know that there are parts of the state that are not as heavily impacted, as parts that have, of course, larger populations. But just think of that. We're all coming from all across the state right now to convene in the Capitol building. And that's why it's still so important for us to be safe, because if your region or your part of the state has not hugely been impacted, but now you're going to be coming into contact with those who've been in areas who have been hugely impacted, you have the potential of being a carrier and carrying this back to your region and part of the state. And so when all this movement start happening, that's when all the shakeup, even more so, is going to continue to happen. And, as of yesterday, we had 3,601 deaths in the state of Illinois, and no one can deny that that is a tragedy. And so I think we ought to continue to be mindful that even though it may not be in your part of the state and you feel safe, once you begin to come into contact with others who are in large metropolitan areas, you become at a greater risk and you take that back to your community.
And you mentioned the number of deaths, 3,601, and we know that a significant share of those deaths, much greater than should be based on the population demographics of Illinois, have been people in the African American community, and now we're also learning more in the Latino community as well. And as chair of the Black Caucus, is there something that you think the legislature should be doing or that Illinois should be doing differently to address this disparity?
Well, let me tell you, Brian, there's of those deaths, that number, 32% of them are of African Americans. So 1,166 are deaths of African Americans. And I think the legislature can play a role as it relates to post-COVID. Right now, as the Black Caucus, we've been fighting really hard to ensure additional test sites in our communities, recognizing the healthcare disparities that we've had in chronic diseases around heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, smoking-related issues. So we know that these chronic diseases are apt to or prone to COVID-19. And then we also know that we're mainly essential workers. We may not be all of the doctors and the nurses, but we're definitely the cashiers, the driver, the bus driver. We're the ones who are in the hospitals, the maintenance, cleaning up behind the doctors and nurses and coming into contact with them. So we're definitely out here as essential workers and on the front lines. And then there's also that part of the community that I don't know for whatever wild reason feel like they're in regions in the state that's not being impacted and they're not as responsible with their PPE as they should be. So there's some dynamics because we come from a lot of generational homes. So we have young people in the home with the elderly, and they may be okay, but they're transmitting that to their elderly family members. And so their grandparents are dying of COVID. Their older uncles and aunts are dying of COVID because they're in the same household with them. And so what I've asked as chairman of the Black Caucus, of the governor, his team, is to be fair with resources and look at areas that Mayor Lightfoot clearly provided data that showed zip codes and where the high proportion of COVID cases were coming from and the high deaths were coming from in the African-American community. So we did right away begin to increase test sites in those areas and provide more PPE. The Black Caucus ourselves have been donating masks and making purchases of PPE and getting this material out and the education behind it to our communities. But as we're moving forward, we need support in hitting that restart button. How do we get our small Black business back moving in our communities? How do we help with those who have not received any supports in unemployment? Domestic violence is on the rise. A lot of our children have not been connected, no connectivity due to either no laptop in the home or no Wi-Fi, or grandparents raising their grandchildren. They don't have the access, the resources, or even the know-how to help them with their homework. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of issues that we've been facing that I feel will carry over. And so we've put together subgroups within our caucus around specific issues so that we can create a platform to here is what we suggest could be done and should be done in order to help us restart the Black community post-COVID.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st. We're speaking with Illinois Senate Majority Leader Kim Lightford. Leader Lightford, I wanted to ask, and you mentioned just a moment ago this idea of essential workers. And I think that in our society, we have sort of gotten a new awakening to what workers are essential to our lives when the rubber really meets the road, to mix metaphors there. But, you know, grocery store clerks, people who, not just the physicians and the nurses, but the people who clean the hospitals, trash collectors, mm-hmm. people like that. And you have long worked on minimum wage is been a big issue of yours in the legislature. You passed the legislation to get it increased over the next few years to $15 an hour, starting last year. Do you think this is a time in just the 2 or 3 minutes we have remaining here to sort of re-envision the social contract and the way that our society treats these workers? Is there an opportunity going forward here?
Well, I've got to tell you, Brian, this pandemic has really opened up a lot of challenges all at once. And a lot of things that we've been fighting for, fair wages, for living wages, for fairness on the job as it relates to sick days and insurance, and all of these things all have come to the surface and hit all at once. And I think that this is a clear example that you find in the nursing home crisis, for example. You had CNAs there that were underpaid. They didn't want to give them additional support. They were not provided PPEs. Many of them were becoming ill. And not only were they infecting each other, they were infecting the patients. And then you begin to see the rise of deaths in nursing homes. So I was a huge supporter of those healthcare workers and ensuring that they were treated fairly and that they were protected and that the institution saw them as viable enough to want to make sure that they were healthy. And so these are the things that, yes, will be high on the pole of discussion around protecting all workers, not just those who, and just in this example, not just the emergency room doctor or not just the high-end nurse, but the nurses' assistants that prep the patients to get them ready for the doctors, those that are in the kitchens that are cooking the food for the hospital, and they're cleaning up behind all of the patients. I mean, those are the individuals that need to be supported, need to be reminded that they are a crucial part of our society and our mm-hmm. fabric and our everyday living of what we need to do. And I will continue to fight and advocate. I'm working on a bill right now around sick pay and sick sick pay leave. I mean, you know, there's still a lot of people who can't get 5 days of sick days in a year, and that's unbelievable. And so it's one of those things that hopefully a lot of these injustices, a lot of these disparities and inequities that have been clearly shown here can continue to be addressed now with an open lens, with a different mindset of those who originally wasn't in support of these things, or maybe just couldn't see it, you know. Mm-hmm. But now none of us should be blindsided at this point. We all know of an invisible killer, and something that we need to band together around and support one another and support those essential workers like none before. They are very crucial, critical part of our everyday living.
Senator Kim Lightford is the Majority Leader of the Illinois Senate. Senator Lightford, thanks so much for speaking with us today on the 21st, and stay safe.
Thank you, Brian, for having me, and you stay safe also. Take care.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.